The head of Crassus was cut off, and with his right hand was taken to the king and treated with mockery which was not undeserved, for molten gold was poured into his gaping mouth so that the dead and bloodless flesh of one whose heart had burned with lust for gold was itself burnt with gold. Welcome to Jerusalem 365, episode 58, God versus Gold. I'm Meir Soloveitchik. And now, in the story of Jerusalem, we must speak of Rome. Beginning in 60 BCE, Rome was ruled de facto, if not de jure, by what was called the First Triumvirate, a somewhat informal arrangement between three Romans. Two of the three are extremely well known today, even to those who are not ardently interested in Roman history. The first is Gaius Julius Caesar. The second is Pompey. But the third, less well known, but once quite famous, is Marcus Licinius Crassus. Because the rivalry between Pompey and Caesar was so central to Roman politics, the role that Crassus played in the triumvirate was as a counterbalance to both. Plutarch puts it this way, quote, "And when all Rome was divided into three powerful parties, that of Pompey, that of Caesar, and that of Crassus, for Cato's reputation was greater than his power, and men admired him more than they followed him, it was the thoughtful and conservative part of the city which attached itself to Pompey, the violent and volatile part which supported the hopes of Caesar, while Crassus took a middle ground and drew from both. He made very many changes in his political views and was neither a steadfast friend nor an implacable enemy, but readily abandoned both his favors and his resentments at the dictates of his interests, so that frequently within a short space of time, the same men and the same measures found in him both an advocate and an opponent. And he had great influence, both from the favors which he bestowed and the fear which he inspired, but more from the fear," end quote. Crassus was a man who was known above all for his love of gold, and who may, it is said, have met his ultimate downfall through gold. His story's intersection with Jerusalem is a fascinating one, and a reminder to us that in the end it is God, not gold, that truly matters. Rome, as we have seen, extended its power into Judea when Pompey intervened into the civil war between Hyrcanus and Aristobulus. We have also seen how Pompey's conquest of the temple itself was achieved in alliance with two men, Hyrcanus and Antipater the Idumean, Hyrcanus's friend, an expert in political machinations, whose family so profoundly impacted the ultimate future of Jerusalem. Upon assumption into the Roman hegemony, Jerusalem became subject to Marcus Licinius Crassus when Crassus was made governor of the region known as Syria. Crassus has been described by historians as one of the richest men in the empire, and his greed for gold was supposed to have, well, outshone any other more positive aspects of his personality. Again, Plutarch tells us, quote, "The Romans, it is true, say that the many virtues of Crassus were obscured by his sole vice of avarice, and it is likely that the one vice which became stronger than all the others in him weakened the rest. The chief proofs of his avarice are found in the way he got his property and in the amount of it. For at the outset he was possessed of not more than 300 talents. Then, during his consulship, he sacrificed the tenth of his goods to Hercules, feasted the people, gave every Roman out of his own means enough to live on for 3 months. And still, when he made a private inventory of his property before his Parthian expedition, he found that it had a value of 7,100 talents. The greatest part of this, if one must tell the scandalous truth, he got together out of fire and war, making the public calamities his greatest source of revenue," end quote. The point of this somewhat obscure passage, as I learned from listening to lectures about Rome online and from reading about Rome, is that Crassus turned his small amount of wealth into an enormous fortune through a variety of morally repugnant actions, including the creation of a group of firefighters who would apparently come to a house aflame in Rome, offer to purchase the land at a low price while it was burning on behalf of Crassus. And then, once the location was assimilated into Crassus's real estate portfolio, the fire would be put out. This, I think, gives a somewhat literal meaning to the phrase fire sale. Upon becoming governor of Syria, Crassus chose to expand his territory by going east into Mesopotamia, attacking the Parthian kingdom. The goal, perhaps, was to further amass wealth because of the well-known gold held by the Parthians. But to fund this quest for gold, Crassus decided that he needed gold, and he chose to take that gold from Jerusalem. Josephus has a very interesting description of this episode. Quote, "Now Crassus, as he was going upon his expedition against the Parthians, came into Judea and carried off the money that was in the temple, which Pompey had left, being 2,000 talents, and was disposed to spoil it of all the gold belonging to it, which was 8,000 talents. He also took a beam, which was made of solid beaten gold, of the weight of 300 minae, each of which weighed 2.5 pounds. It was the priest who was guardian of the sacred treasures, and whose name was Eleazar, that gave him this beam. Not out of a wicked design, for he was a good and righteous man, but being entrusted with the custody of the veils belonging to the temple, which were of admirable beauty and of very costly workmanship, and hung down from this beam, when he saw that Crassus was busy in gathering money and was in fear for the entire ornaments of the temple, he gave him this beam of gold as a ransom for the whole, but this not till he had given his oath that he would remove nothing else out of the temple, but be satisfied with this only, which he should give him, being worth many 10,000 shekels, end quote. Thus was a beam of pure gold given by Eleazar, keeper of the veils, unto Crassus, in order to ensure that the rest of Jerusalem's gold was not taken by Crassus. What was this golden beam, and why would Eleazar, the keeper of the veils, have it? What this seems to mean, as some have commented, is that this was a beam utilized for the hanging of the veils, separating the Holy of Holies from the rest of the temple. It was, in other words, a very special beam, indeed, offered to Crassus only in order to prevent further robbery from the temple. But Eleazar's attempt was in vain, as Josephus continues, quote, "Now this beam was contained in a wooden beam that was hollow, but was known to no others, but Eleazar alone knew it. Yet did Crassus take away this beam, upon the condition of touching nothing else that belonged to the temple, and then broke his oath, and carried away all the gold that was in the temple," end quote. Centuries after Crassus, as we will see in later episodes, the gold of the temple was again taken by Titus in order to fund many Roman building projects. But the precedent was set by Crassus. The gold of the temple taken in order to fund his wars, his great desire for gold, driving him to violate the temple itself. The story's description of the well-meaning Eleazar hiding the golden beam inside a covering of wood reminded me of the Shakespearean scene in The Merchant of Venice, describing suitors coming to seek Portia's hand in Belmont. A potential suitor, as Shakespeare describes, was presented with 3 boxes of gold, silver, and lead, and was asked to guess which contained Portia's portrait. The first suitor, the Prince of Morocco, immediately chose gold. "After all," as he reasoned, "lead is for coffins, and gold," he said, "is better than silver because it is more precious." He opened the box and, among other things, found not Portia's portrait, but rather a note describing his mistake, a note that began with one of Shakespeare's famous lines. "All that glitters is not gold, often have you heard that told. Many a man his life hath sold, but my outside to behold, gilded tombs do worms enfold. Had you been as wise as bold, young in limbs and judgment old, your answer had not been enscrolled. Fare you well, your suit is cold." Thus the source of a famous line, "All that glitters is not gold." And it appears in a play, The Merchant of Venice, that is filled with calumnies about the relationship between Jews and money. In contrast, Eleazar reflected what Jews, in contrast to Crassus, sought to actually do with their gold, which was honor God. As Josephus adds, quote, "And let no one wonder that there was so much wealth in our temple, since all the Jews throughout the habitable earth, and those that worshiped God, nay, even those of Asia and Europe, sent their contributions to it, and this from very ancient times," end quote. It is striking, therefore, that Crassus himself went down to defeat against the Parthians, and that Roman historians themselves spoke of his avarice leading to disaster. Plutarch tells us that before the battle, a message from the Parthian king came, referring to the treaties that had been made with Rome. Quote, "Ambassadors arrived from King Orodes with a message bidding him remember the treaties made with Pompeius and Sulla. Crassus, who coveted the royal treasures, answered not a word that had any semblance of justice," end quote. Crassus went down to defeat. His army was destroyed, and Plutarch gives us one description of what happened to him. Quote, "The remnants of the unhappy army scattered wherever their flight took them, through Armenia, Cilicia, and Syria, scarcely even brought back the news of the disaster. The head of Crassus was cut off, and with his right hand was taken to the king, and treated with mockery which was not undeserved, for molten gold was poured into his gaping mouth, so that the dead and bloodless flesh of one whose heart had burned with lust for gold was itself burnt with gold," end quote. This is the description of the end of the man who had taken the gold of the temple, including perhaps gold dedicated to the Holy of Holies itself, the Holy of Holies being a sacred space that is so much more important than gold itself. Shakespeare wrote that all that glitters is not gold, and the man who desired gold, who was so powerful in Rome, ended up becoming the least famous and often forgotten member of the First Triumvirate. His plundering of the temple portended another Roman plundering of Jerusalem yet to come, but his downfall also perhaps reminds us of the ultimate downfall of the Roman Empire itself. Interestingly, some have noted that the author J.R.R. Tolkien, in his Lord of the Rings trilogy, was inspired by The Merchant of Venice to provide a reversal of Shakespeare's All That Glitters Is Not Gold, a poem that begins with an obvious allusion to the story of Portia. Tolkien's poem, written about a long-lost dynasty of kings, also captures the Jewish notion of a people exiled that would return to its land, and the Jewish belief in the ultimate redemption and the eternity of Jerusalem. Here is Tolkien's poem. All that is gold does not glitter. Not all those who wander are lost. The old that is strong does not wither. Deep roots are not reached by the frost. From the ashes a fire shall be woken. A light from the shadows shall spring. Renewed shall be blade that was broken. The crownless again shall be king. This is Mayor Soloveitchik. Looking forward to learning together tomorrow. Signing off.